Turn to Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:25 on February 12th, and with us we have Representative Heron, Representative Josephson, Representative Sadler, and myself, Chair Olson. We do have a quorum to conduct business, and I believe we'll probably have at least one other member coming in. Representative Reinbold has previously been excused. Quite a lot of familiar faces. Welcome back. Today we've got Commissioner Diane Bloomer and a number of her directors, and Chair Show, Commissioner, come on up. Are you going to rotate people? Or
We are a little, if that's all right with you.
Perfect.
So. So we'll just... For the record, my name is Diane Bloomer. I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And here at the table with me, you probably recognize Gray Mitchell. He's our Assistant Commissioner and also wears two hats. He's the Labor Standard and Safety Division Director. So he will be not only filling the role of the Assistant today, but reporting out on that particular division as well.
And welcome back, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. So Chair Olson and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to present to you today. In the interest of time, I decided not to bring every one of our directors back up because you folks have heard from them last year. So what we thought we would do is give you a quick overview of the department, very brief, see if there's questions, and then tell you a couple of the things that we actually can highlight over the last year. And that was my understanding. That's what this committee was looking
that's
forward to today.
Perfect.
Okay. I do want to introduce one director. You'll see throughout this process that there's some new players with us that we're very excited about, and one of them that I'd like to actually introduce that won't be presenting today is our Admin Services Director, Paloma Harmer. I think she's back here. She's because it's not financial, she doesn't have to come up here today.
A familiar face, I might add.
Yeah, she was acting last year, but she's actually there today. And also next to Paloma is Michelle Zinger, who's our legislative liaison, and so I thought it would be good for you to put a face with a name as far as that goes. As many of you are aware, the mission of the department is to provide safe and legal working conditions to advance the opportunity for employment. We're made up of three core services primarily. We protect Alaskan workers, we provide income replacement, and workforce development is one of our largest components of this department. This presentation will address, my brief presentation will address all three of these components, and then I'll have the new directors come up and give you a quick overview on their divisions. This organizational chart may look familiar to you. It's broken out by core services as opposed to a standard organizational chart. And we did that because some of the services overlap, and we wanted to do a good reflection of what the core services actually did provide. So some of this may be a little bit redundant, so bear with me. The dark blue areas primarily provide departmental oversight, commissioner's office, administrative services, things of that nature. The light blue-colored areas provide workforce development functions, and I'll briefly describe those, just the component, or just the mission of that component, and then we'll tell you about some of the highlights. The Division of Business Partnerships is our arm that reaches out to businesses and industry folks to provide assistance in design and implementation of training and workforce development plans. The Employment Security Division has two components within the core services, so you'll hear me mention them twice. The first component is a workforce development component, and it provides a public labor exchange. The Alaska Workforce Investment Board provides policy oversight of state and federal funded jobs and job training. The Alaska Vocational Technical Center, which you're probably all familiar with, is a adult vocational training school in Seward. The Vocational Rehabilitation Division also is laid out here with two components because of the core services. And in one of the components is the workforce development element that the staff assist individuals with disabilities into getting into the workplace. The brown colored boxes, the two off to my right, are the Labor Standards and Safety Division, which Gray will talk to you a bit about, that provides enforcement and training and monitoring of the laws and occupational safety and health. The other is the Alaska Labor Relations Agency, which administers the Public Employment Relations Act. The green colored areas our income replacement for those who are not able to work. The Employment Security Division is that's the second component of that particular division. The Workers' Comp Division, which administers the State Workers' Compensation Act, which you're all familiar with.
Yeah, I'm going to cut in real quick. I would like to be on the record to thank Mike Monagle, who has been extremely helpful the last year and a half on both workers' comp and opioid issues. And just extremely responsive, and you're not paying him enough, by the way.
Thank you, Charleson. We agree with you. And then finally, the disability determination, which is the other component of the vocational rehabilitation division that I spoke with you about. This map probably too is redundant from last year, but just to do a quick overview and a quick cap, it simply illustrates the services provided statewide. You'll see the red areas identify our 21 job service centers. And actually, you'll only see 9 of those because 3 of those job service centers are in Anchorage. The blue areas identify where we offer vocational rehabilitation services. And then the green are all other services, worker protection and administrative services. And you'll just see 3 of those components. And AvTech has 2 locations, and those are the purple ones that you can hardly see at all. If you want a little better description of that, we can get that for you. Our Alaska Labor Relations Agency had 2 bullets they'd like to highlight for the last year, and they provided training for a summer law intern in a study law in Alaska program sponsored by the University of Alaska, Anchorage, and the Seattle University School of Law. The intern provided research and helped draft decisions and orders. The part that we really like about it is that it's no cost to the department, and it trains the future workforce. So that's a little highlight that we have there. And this agency continues to work to resolve more cases through resolution without the formal hearing process, which saves everybody time and money. The Alaska Workforce Investment Board has seen many changes this year. We have a new executive director who I believe is online, Nancy Dahlstrom, who many of you are probably familiar with. We're happy to have her on board, and I will highlight the 3 areas that we chose to share with you today, and if you have questions, she's available to answer some of those. One of the highlights is that the Alaska Workforce Investment Board just completed 2 job center certifications and passed resolutions regarding this required law, which basically makes sure that we have universal standards through all of our job service, our one-stop centers for and meet any ADA, EEO, any of those requirements so that we can provide services to every single Alaskan. The AWIB participated heavily in the creation of the oil and gas plan, which we hope to roll out here within the next couple of weeks, which is an update to what was formerly known as the AGEA plan. So it's been about 5 years or 6, I believe, and so we're rolling out a new plan that's a little more in line with what we're looking at today as far as a gas line. And additionally, we've worked very, very closely with the Alaska Workforce Investment Board to do a little more outreach. What we found is people didn't know what the Alaska Workforce Investment Board was or what they did. And all of us in the room, whoever have worked with workforce development, know that you can't have a workforce development plan without industry input. So what we did was we took the Alaska Workforce Investment to some of the targeted communities that we thought were really struggling with some of their economic development and their workforce development. So we went to the Kenai. Thank you, Charleson. I think you joined us for some of the meeting.
Yep.
We went to Ketchikan. And in both of those communities, we actually invited industry folks to come sit on a panel and talk to us about the needs of their industry and what their labor force looked like. And I'll share with the committee that across the board we heard the need for soft skills for our younger folks, and basically that boils down to work ethics, being able to pass a background check, have a driver's license, pass a drug test, and basic work ethics about showing up, punctuality, those kind of things. So we're the Workforce Investment Board has now come back together and tried to focus on how can we actually make a difference in that area. So we're doing a lot more outreach with a lot more industry involvement, and I think that will show over the next few years as we work with that group. ABTECH is something that you're all familiar with, and while he's not new to the department, because he'll be able to talk a little bit more about some of the programs that they're offering down there, I always think ABTECH's a little bit of our diamond in the rough, or a little gold nugget down there. They actually have a lot of good outcomes. They have some great training programs, and we have some new dorms down there. I'd like to invite you all down to visit. I'll turn it over to Fred Esposito, who's our director down there, to talk about the three highlights that he would have, and maybe to let you know when the ribbon cutting would be for the dorms. So, Fred, are you online? Is he?
He is, yeah. Oh. Maybe we can bring up the next person we're having. He can hear us, but not well.
We'll skip ABTECH and come back to that. The next component is the business partnerships. And Juanetta Ayers, who is our new division director in that division, probably familiar to many of you. She's been around and probably sat at this table plenty of times before. So I believe she's online, and she's able to provide you with a few highlights from her division as well. We'll try that one.
Juanetta, are you online? We're striking out.
Strike two. Okay, we'll keep waiting on that. We have a new division director in employment security as well. And he's here in the room, so we should be able to hear from him. His name is James Harvey. He's been with the department for quite some time and moved into the director's role last year. So I'll have him come up and highlight a few of the highlights for his division.
To the chair, the committee, for the record, my name is James Harvey. I'm the director of the Employment Security Division for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
And welcome back as well.
Thank you. Just a few of the things that we've done this current year, so 7-1 to date. The first one there that we have is that we recorded a 22% lower unemployment insurance tax rate for 2014. That was essentially as a result of the passage of HB 76 last year. And it allowed the solvency tax adjustment to fall to the calculated difference rather than just the 3/10. And so that was a big boon for us there. The next one that we have is that our unemployment insurance program exceeded all of their federal UI management acceptable levels of performance goals for core measures. So what that means to us is that we're doing a fair job and we're doing it well. This year, from 7-1 until now, we've experienced over 150,000 job center visits. That's in all of FY 2013, which was 254,000 and change. So we're on the rate to beat that.
That's including online. That's not just physical visits?
That is physical, Mr. Chair. That is physical location visits to our 21 spots that we have throughout the state. Your question about the online visits, I don't have this year's tally, but last year's FY 2013, we had 1,840,000 and change individual visits to the online labor exchange. The last bullet that we have is a really good one, the GED test. This year, since 7-1, we've graduated or helped to graduate 1,635 graduates. That's just since July 1st. In all of last year, we helped to graduate 1,623. So just in the 6-month period for this year alone, we've already beat last year. And that's a direct result, I think, of the upcoming or the changes that occurred to the GED test itself.
That's significant.
Correct.
For the record, Diane Bloomer again. Chair Olson, would you prefer that we have, as we have the directors come up, that they take any questions regarding their division?
Well, actually, we've got the telephone lines working, and we can pick up with Fred if you'd like.
Okay. Do you want me to just have Mr. Harvey stay up here, or?
Any questions for Jim? Thanks again.
Thank you, Chair.
Got off light. This is a friendly crew. But Fred Esposito, are you with us, Fred?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, yeah, you're coming through good. Thank you for joining us today, and you have our undivided attention.
Well, thank you so much. Again, my name is Fred Esposito. I am the director of APTIC, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this evening. APTIC is, has had a long history of providing workforce development and training in Alaska. As you can see, we graduated 366 students in long-term training programs and 758 in one or other short-term training program in the fiscal year 13. So we're proud of our completion and our graduation rates. We had an 87% completion rate and a 92% training-related job placement training-related job placement rate for fiscal year 12 for all of our long-term graduates. And those are statistics that hold up very well against other schools nationally. We do follow our students 1 year out from graduation and report those statistics from what we find out from them. As the Commissioner Bloomer mentioned, we did have our dorm replacement capital project completed this year on time and on budget, and that project opened up for students to use on the 4th of January, an excellent project, and we thank the legislature for your support, and that's a project, a facility that will APTIC will be able to utilize for years to come. APTIC's maritime training program is first in the country to offer a U.S. Coast Guard approved ICE navigation course. So this has really put the APTIC maritime program on an international level of providing a training to meet the IMO Polar Code, which industry will need to meet here in the coming future, especially as they look to work in the Arctic. Our programs are embraced by industry, and especially in the maritime field. We're using up-to-date maritime technology, and we understand the regulations, and we utilize the innovations that industry are using on their ships to serve Alaska. Some of our contract training programs that we provide in the maritime program, we're working with ConocoPhillips, Polar Tankers, Norton Sound Economic Development Corporation, and quite a few others to provide contract training specifically for their needs as an industry and as a company. We always say that our programs are, maritime programs are area-specific, vessel-specific, and company-specific. In fiscal year 13, we had corporate and partner support of more than $350,000 in cash, equipment and expertise by companies such as Princess Cruises, Crowley, Edison Schwest, LAS Pipeline, and et cetera. So just to show that we do have good industry participation and support. And again, thank you for the opportunity and be happy to take questions.
Any questions for Fred? Representative Perrin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Fred, you talked about your 92% training-related job placement, and you said that you do do a one-year follow-up. How do those numbers look? You didn't mention the numbers.
Through the chair, Representative Aaron, those are the numbers. So we follow our students from 1 year after graduation, and so the last year that we have full information for would be FY12. And again, 87% completion and 92% training-related employment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Mr. Representative Espino, just a question. Do you have any quantitative analysis of how much the new dorms or the improvements to the dormitory situation, does that improve your retention or graduation rates, or what's the measurable benefit of that to the students' education?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler. We really feel that, first and foremost, you know, the dorm that it replaced was an aging facility that really was falling apart. And so students were housed in a facility that was quite drafty and noisy and uncomfortable to live in. And so it made for an environment that wasn't the number one very, very user-friendly and also not very conducive to studying. So we think we'll have more students staying on campus. We think we'll have more students being able to experience the campus environment and having a better better experience at Aptec. Hopefully it will improve our completion rates, although our completion rates and our training placement rates are good. I think that hopefully it will increase enrollment. And so we would look to that facility to perhaps attract more students, be a more attractive place for them to stay while they're receiving their training at Aptec. And students will be able to talk about Aptec as they leave there with a good experience and spread the word and open the doors to others. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. Good.
Oh, certainly.
Mr. Espino, could you give me, do the students pay for their residence costs? Is that part of the program? Do they have to pay for them out of pocket? Is that an educational expense? Just wondering how students generally pay for the dorm expenses.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, yes, students do pay for that for to stay in the dorms, and they're funding that the way they would at any other college campus.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks again, Fred. Bonetta, do you have a prepared statement or just want to say hello?
Thank you, Chairman Olson and members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee. My name is Juanetta Ayers. I'm the Director of the Division of Business Partnerships. Our role is to manage the state's investment in workforce and development. In FY13, that resulted in the training of over 5,500 Alaska workers and the delivery of career awareness, guidance, or work experience for more than 21,000 students. We have listened to employers, training providers, and other grantees and rebuilt our grant-making process to offer a combined solicitation for our competitive grants, which is currently on the street. And this will enable all of our awardees to develop their programs and have a full state fiscal year in order to deliver them and optimize their use of those grant funds. Additionally, over the course of the last year, we've been working with the oil and gas industry on the development of a workforce development plan. And as the commissioner mentioned, we hope to have that out and available for public comment and review, and then we will have a finalized document within the next 30 to 35 days.
Bonetta, do you have a presence in North Pole right now? As respects Flint Hills, or is that a different division?
Thank you, Chairman Olson. That is a different division, and I would defer those comments to or responses to James Harvey with the Employment Security Division.
Any questions for Juanetta? Thanks again for joining us. Nancy Dahlstrom.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. How are you?
Oh, excellent. How are you?
I'm doing good. Nice to hear your voice. Can you answer any questions you might have?
Well, I figured we had you on, we'd ask you some.
Good.
How do you like the new job?
Well, I do like it. I really enjoy it a lot. I certainly miss you and the committee, but I do love my position here.
That is likewise. We hope you make it down sometime during the session, but we'll let you off the hook. Bob Heron has a question.
Great.
Nancy, good to hear from you, hear your voice. On AWIB, in the PowerPoint, of course, the first bullet is completed two job center certifications required by the feds. Do we need to certify more than those two?
Thank you for the question, Representative Heron. Through the chair, every job center needs to be certified on a timely basis. At present time, we are current in our certification.
Follow up. So there's a picture of the board. Do you believe it's regionally balanced? I don't believe there's anybody from my region.
Well,
Through the chair, currently we do not have anyone from Bethel. I will tell you that one of the things that the commissioner and I have talked about is as chairs or seats become open, we want to ensure that we have an even more adequate representation from around the state. And so I know that we are certainly interested in working with you and the senator from your area on someone that may wish to apply for those positions.
So, Mr. Chairman, a follow-up to that is, of course, due to the wisdom of the redistricting board, I represent both Bethel and Alaska. How about the Aleutians?
Through the chair, we do not have anyone from the Aleutians right now.
Representing variance, looking for two seats on the board.
Mr. Chairman, another follow-up question. So, Nancy, will you take questions on TVEP?
I will certainly do my best. Yes, sir.
Okay. First question is: does the administration have a position on the current allocation of those dollars around the state? The possible changes that the legislature may consider.
Through the chair, Representative Herron, we are not able to state a position on who should get what. It would be inappropriate for us to do so. One, we do have ABTEC, which is a state agency, who is applying for some of those funds. We hope that the information that we have presented to you, it will allow you to make appropriate decisions on how you delegate those funds.
So, Mr. Chairman, I got a couple more questions, but so in we may add some more, but we don't see the pie getting bigger, so that means possibly certain entities would get a smaller slice of the pie. So, setting that aside for the moment, how does the department define success when you have some entities out there that do real well and others underperform? Do you have a success definition?
Through the chair, Representative Herron, that's a good question. AWIB is currently looking at the definitions that we do have. We're working with Business Partnerships, Juanetta's group, on that, and we're trying to make sure that we have not a rating system, but a way that we can look and see how people are performing with the tools that they do have. You know, everyone in the different areas of the state does not have access to the same centers or facilities, and so you can't just do a straight rating across the board.
New question?
I do have a new question, but maybe I'll hold it in reserve. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you have an executive director from the center of the universe that covers a multitude of sins or multitude of geographical distribution questions, so I just want to give her props. Hello, Nancy. A sincere question, though. I noticed from the slide here on AWIB that you have participated in revising the oil and gas plan. My question is, has there been any new focus of the revisions, any new directions or trends in the employment in oil and gas regions these days?
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Sadler. Nice to hear your voice. As Juanetta stated earlier, that is specifically under the direction of her division, and several of the members of the AWIB have participated on that committee. As far as going a new direction, I do not have information on that, but I believe I heard Director Ayers say that the report will be ready in 30, 35 days, okay. And she may have more to add to that.
Look forward to it. Thanks. Good to hear your voice, too.
Thanks again, Nancy.
You are welcome. Take care.
You too. Let's see. How about North Pole? That was fresh in my mind.
So I'll invite Director Harvey back up here to talk a little bit about what we're doing at Plant Hills. Is that sufficient?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I might add, I've talked to a number of the legislators from the area and told them what happened when we had both Agrium and Conoco go through their layoffs. And I hope you guys can deliver as well for North Pole as you did for us.
We're trying.
Chair and committee, right now the Employment Security Division...
Oh, can you read your name onto the record, please? Sorry.
For the record, James Harvey, Director, Employment Security Division, Department of Labor and Workforce Development. At this point in time, we have staff who are dedicated rapid response specialists, much as we had in the Kenai when Agrium was undergoing its change. Those staff have reached out specifically to Flint Hills, and we continue to work with that employer to establish at some point in the near future worker meetings to where that they can be made knowing about the services that we provide through the job center that's provided through them through unemployment insurance and on down the line. At some point in the near future, we hope to establish that relationship with them in a concrete manner, and that could come at the point in time that they choose to file a WARN notice.
Well, again, we were extremely grateful for the job you did on the Central Peninsula.
And, Charleston, if I could just add to that a little bit. The administration has actually reached out, too, to the Industry Alliance and the Resource Development Council to assist us in any jobs or industry information that they have to provide back to the folks who may be facing layoff. So we're reaching out outside of where we normally would.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Harvey, you referred to some kind of notice right at the end of your statement. What?
Correct. It's called the WARN notice, W-A-R-N.
Mm-hmm. And what is that?
And what it is employers who have more than 50 employees are required to file that notice within 60-day advance of a layoff situation occurring.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Thanks again, Jim.
Thank you, sir.
Carlson, I'm going to turn it over to Gray Mitchell, who's going to act right now as the Director of Labor Standards and Safety. But before I do that, I want to address a question that Representative Herron had. And Representative Herron, we are more than happy to take any applications that you have for your region. I have been asking around for both Bethel, Barrow, and Onalaska. So if you have names to put forward, please do so, and we'll follow up with that.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Commissioner, I'll have to check. I believe there's been people that have applied, but they were not selected for whatever reason. So I'll let the region know, both the Aleutians and the YK Delta area.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. This is Gray Mitchell. I'm the Assistant Commissioner and also the Director of the Labor Standards and Safety Division in the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. I'd just like to cover a couple of high points from the Division of Labor Standards and Safety. There are four separate components, and just have one really highlight for each one. First is the Wage and Hour Administration, which handles enforcement of all the wage and hour laws, regulations, child labor, and so on. This group really has focused a lot of effort on assisting employers over the last year. And as you can see from our slide, they provided over 12,000 briefings to employers throughout the state. And this assists those employers to understand the laws and regulations, because what we found is that most employers want to do the right thing, but laws and regulations can be confusing. And so we've really taken a proactive effort to try and make sure that they are aware of the rules, and then generally there's fewer problems. And we have noticed that actually that correlation in terms of the numbers of wage claims that we've received as our effort to increase briefings has taken place, we've actually seen fewer wage claims filed. The next bullet is in relation to our mechanical inspection component. We did inspect over 5,000 boilers, 557 elevators, and did over 1,500 electrical and plumbing inspections throughout the year. One outcome result is our with respect to our goals related to doing timely inspections of boilers and elevators, and we did achieve our goals to inspect those at a 90% timeliness rate for this last year. which is good news because we haven't always been able to do that. The next bullet is increasing worksite inspections. This is for the occupational safety and health component. We did do 15% more inspections over this last fiscal year than the previous year. That breaks out to about 60% of the inspections being in consultation, which is the non-enforcement arm of our agency, and about 40% of those inspections being enforcement, which is typically in relation to an accident or a complaint, although we also do some just general schedule surprise visit inspections for enforcement. We did see some big results in the occupational safety and health category over this last year. We saw a 7% reduction in the overall last time injury and illness rate, and it was the second lowest rate that we've that we know of in the history since we've been tracking it. So pretty tremendous achievement. And in two of our focus areas, in construction and transportation and warehousing, we saw rates drop by 24% and 17% respectively. So pretty tremendous results. The last bullet there is on the Safety Advisory Council component. And this is a group of 13 individuals who are appointed by the governor for the purpose of focusing effort and attention on safety and health issues throughout Alaska. They do put on the governor's Safety and Health Conference each year, and so the note there is simply providing you with an invitation, an open invitation, that if you happen to be able to break away in March, please stop by the Denina Center March 4th through 6th. You know, we have a tremendous outpouring of educational information. One of the things that that we've really been proud of is our youth outreach effort, and this year the effort is going exponential. We've been working with the King Career Center over the last few years, and we get about 100 students exposed to occupational safety and health at the Governor's Safety and Health Conference. This year, West High School in Anchorage has joined the fray, and they're opening up their conference rooms and busing students from all around the Anchorage School District, so that we'll see around 2,000 students this year being given seminars in workplace safety and health awareness. Thank you.
Any questions? Thanks again for joining us today.
So, Mr. Chairman, moving on to the Vocational Rehabilitation Division, Cheryl Walsh is our division director there. She's in the audience today to answer specific questions that may come before this group, but I thought I would just briefly go over some of the bullets in the interest of time. Our DVR counselors are trained to effectively address the unique employment barriers faced by individuals with disabilities and conviction histories. We are also, the department as a whole is working very closely with the Department of Corrections for recidivism reduction. So we have been very focused on helping folks who are released into the communities overcome some of those barriers to get into employment.
Has the program been going on long enough to have any indication on how it's working out? Credible numbers.
As far as the vocational rehabilitation component,
is it cutting down?
20.8% of the total population has been served, but I'm not exactly sure. Is that Cheryl? The number
of 21% of our caseload are people who have conviction history.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Representative Heron.
Just to, on that point, of the convictions, obviously some convictions, it's a very high barrier. This is the same issue we face in tribal health out in the Bethel region. But what have you found when you're talking about a barrier of a youth that 16, 17 years old has a shoplifting conviction compared to a horrific crime? Is that something that the legislature should deal with? Those low barriers. For example, the example I use is is a doc was found to have had a shoplifting conviction, and they had to move him to another job occupation where that did not create a barrier. Should the I'm asking more of a holistic question. Should the legislature look at revisit barrier crimes?
Through the chair, Representative Herron, the Criminal Justice Working Group is doing that right now. They have identified many barrier crimes, not only in Alaska but nationally as well, and are looking at ways to make sure that there's a nexus applied to the barrier, so that there is a group that's currently working on that. Do you have anything you want to add, Cheryl?
For the record, I'm Cheryl Walsh. I'm the director of the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. We're finding an increasing number of people that we are working with that have misdemeanor and felony convictions. The way that we're able to deal with it is we develop unique relationships with employers, and based on the trust of the relationship that we have with them, oftentimes they'll give somebody a chance, but we are finding increasing numbers of them, and any assistance that, you know, we can work with people so that this doesn't become a lifelong barrier after they serve their time is helpful for gaining employment.
So basically we're talking about misdemeanor, nonviolent criminal acts? Or are we talking
Chairman Olson, we have a variety. We have the whole spectrum.
So, Mr. Chairman, so that's good that someone's is looking at this and is going to give recommendations, and if it would, this would probably be a committee that would review it. Is there any ETA, estimated time of arrival of this document?
Through the chair, Representative Herron, I don't know what it is at this point, but I can certainly find out at our next criminal justice working group and get back to you. I think that's the beginning of next month, so I'd be happy to provide that information back to your office.
If you could share it with the chairman, and then he can distribute it to all of us, please.
I will do that.
I'm guessing he was being polite and asking, is it going to be while we're still in session or after, or can you tell at this point in time?
I just sit on the committee, so I'll have to ask the folks that are actually working on that project for a final date. So I'll get that back to you. And since Cheryl's already up here, I thought I would just punt back over to her since we're talking about her division, and, yeah, and she can kind of wrap up the last bullet point.
A nice lead in.
Yeah. Again, I'm Cheryl Walsh, the Director of the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. We have recently, within the last year, we've established a specialized business team, and that's a vocational rehabilitation counselors that will work directly with employers and do try to really work to meet the needs of the employer as we do the match, because we find that, you know, we have increasing numbers of people with the criminal histories. We also have people with more complex medical conditions and barriers to employment, and we really need to understand the businesses that we're trying to serve. So we have a team that we've established to really work together with business and connect statewide with some employers with the single point of contact, which employers, I think, appreciate. During the last year, we assisted 598 individuals with disabilities to find employment, and that was our second highest year. The year prior was our highest year, and we knew we were going to have a little bit of trouble to meet that benchmark, but we're on target again to exceed the level that we did for last year. We're really happy. We have collaborated with the Department of Administration to increase the knowledge of the provisional hiring program that was established in statute, and what it does is allows people with disabilities to have access to state jobs with an additional 4 months of provisional hire, so they can actually have like an interview, a performance kind of interview for an extra 4 months rather than always going through the competitive interview process, which for some people with disabilities is very difficult, and it doesn't really show how they can perform. And it's been a statute that's very underutilized, and recently the Department of Administration added to the checklist that hiring managers use when they're going to put a job posting on Workplace Alaska. They have to look at it, they have to check off whether or not they've considered provisional hire, and then it gives a link and describes the program. So we're really hopeful that that will increase our opportunity, because oftentimes we don't know in time to know when a job is going to be posted, and so this should help out a lot with that.
Excellent. Representative Josephson.
Well, just returning to this issue of employment barriers, one thing, because there's so much that we're asked to read, particularly now, if there was some sort of executive summary so that I had a sense of the crime and the employment barrier, and then we could make a policy decision more easily. I mean, so for example, a theft conviction might understandably prevent someone from working in a bank, it strikes me, but maybe less so as an elementary school teacher, that sort of thing. I don't know if that's possible, but I would be interested in that sort of thing.
To the Chair, Representative Josephson, yes, we do have quite an extensive report that was done from a national organization that we've been trying to simplify, because it is overwhelming to look at. I think Carmen Gutierrez, who was a former Deputy Commissioner of Corrections, started this process, and when they first looked through our statutes, don't hold me to this number, but I believe it was about 485 barriers just in our statutes alone. So we are trying to pare that down and do a crosswalk of sorts to specific jobs and specific crimes. So we'll certainly do our best to get it as simplified as possible, but there are very, very many barriers out there.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Speaker Chenault, who's got lots of questions.
So if there aren't any further questions, we'll move on to workers' comp, and we'll have our director, Mike Monagle, come up and address the group. And I'm sure he's no stranger to this group. So,
come on up, Mike. Welcome back. Thanks for all the help.
Yep, for the record, Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'm Mike Monagle. I'm director of the Division of Workers' Compensation. I'll move quickly through these bullets. Last year, for the first time in my 16 years with the division, our workers' comp board formed a working group of labor and industry, and we went out and did listening sessions in Fairbanks, Anchorage, Kenai, and Juneau to try to get a sense of the issues that employees and employers have out there. We found that to be very instructive. We received a lot of good feedback from both labor and industry for making that effort. We have actually made the working group a permanent subcommittee of the board, and we intend on continuing that practice. I guess I'm going from the bottom up. We this year in July rolled out a new case management system. We call it ICERS. It does a couple things. One is improves our data capture, but it also allows us to take advantage of electronic data interchange, whereby insurance companies, claims administrators, employers, self-insured employers can report information to the division electronically. So instead of having to fill out a piece of paper, send it to the insurance company, fills out another piece of paper, and sends it to the claims administrator, who fills out another piece of paper, we get it, and we have to key that information. Now, from the inception to the division, that can happen very quickly. And then the top bullet, one of the things we do as a division, we have a special investigations unit that ensures compliance with the insurance requirements of the Workers' Comp Act. There are fairly steep civil penalties that can be assessed to an employer who fails to carry insurance. So we're trying to be more proactive in having educational sessions for employers around the state. A lot of times employers are unaware of what the legal requirements are, or sometimes misinformed about things like independent contractors, employee labor, and we'd rather catch them up front, educate them, and then have them meet in compliance rather than catch them on the backside and have them pay large civil penalties. And with that, I'll take any questions.
After one of their employees has had a claim and found out that they're being carried as an independent contractor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that precise topic, I had a visitor in my office who said that in some trades like drywalling and carpentry, this is sort of a rampant problem.
And roofers.
And roofers. And is there some way that the division knows that a contractor, for example, or the general contractor, must have more than three employees? In other words, you see the workers' comp policy on file, but you sense that there's something more going on and that there's a shifting of duties. Because if this individual is correct, these people are being treated as employees for tax purposes, but otherwise are told to sort of fend for themselves. Have you identified this as being a problem?
Yeah, and through the chair, Representative Josephson, we've heard the same thing. There are a lot of people, particularly in the construction industry, who treat their employees as independent contractors. I think some of it's misinformation. Sometimes people are told, we'll purchase your business license for you, we'll 1099 you, and you are an independent contractor, not an employee, which is, of course, incorrect. We approach that through complaints. Typically, we'll get a complaint from industry, from a particular employer, from an employee, and we have a memorandum of understanding with the Division of Insurance on how we handle this. If the employer has no insurance at all, then we take that as a workers' comp issue as an uninsured employer. If the employer has an insurance policy, then we turn that over to Division of Insurance, which then treats that as a misclassification or basically premium fraud, in that they're underreporting premium or misclassifying the employment. So in a collaborative effort between Division of Insurance and us, we do follow up on those complaints.
Thank you. Are the statutes adequate to protect from these situations? In other words, is there something more that Juneau needs to do or the legislature needs to do, or is it just an enforcement thing? Do you have the sufficient manpower to do that? Those kind of questions.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I think our statutes are adequate. This is a hot topic countrywide. It's not just isolated to Alaska. A lot of states have adopted statutory language specific to independent contractors, going so far as requiring a person to register with the state as an independent contractor to be such. I don't think anyone's interested in building on to bureaucracy by adding another layer for businesses to do. We do have, through statute and regulation, I think a well-defined litmus test for determining whether somebody is an employee or independent contractor. And I think when those cases come before our adjudicating body, the Alaska Workers' Compensation Board, I think it's a fact set depending on the relationship between that employer and their employee or independent contractor to be able to make that determination.
Thank you.
And oftentimes, I suspect when you hear about it is when somebody has consistently been second lowest bidder and the lowest bidder doesn't have the 20, 25, 40% labor burden that everybody else does.
And Mr. Chairman, that's, you know, we have a lot of people that play by the rules, and they have to compete with folks that don't. And where we get the complaints is when they consistently get underbid because they don't have 12 employees working for them. They have 12 independent contractors.
Okay. Representative Hearn.
Yes, thank you. You indicated that people appreciated you going out and listening and learning. Could you share, say, the top two examples of complaints that you heard? I mean, they were not just one person, but several were complaining about the same issue.
Through the chair, Representative Hearn, the number one item that we got from employers was the cost of their premium, and predominantly with that, medical costs. The other things we heard from some injured workers was the amount of time it takes to get disputes settled. Sometimes, but when there's a denial of benefits from an employer, by the time they initiate the dispute resolution process with the board and do all their discovery, cases can go for years. I mean, I've seen cases 8-10 years, and which is horrific. I mean, if you need a solution, so whether you're denied benefits ultimately or awarded benefits, that needs to happen quicker. On a voluntary basis, we do mediations now, which has cut the amount of time. We last year did 60 mediations. Nice thing about mediations, we have about a 90% resolution rate, but it's voluntary. The parties, there's nothing in statute that requires it. And probably the other thing we get a lot of complaints on is the reemployment process that we administer. If you're hurt, you can't go back and do the same work you were doing before. We have a process in statute that provides for retraining. You get a training benefit. You get a cash stipend to help you live while you're in retraining. And our success rate in getting people retrained into new occupations is about 8%. We get about 10 to 12 people a year that actually do that. Most folks just take the cash and settle out. So we're really not assisting that injured worker and getting them back into gainful employment like they need to be.
Thanks again, Mike.
Thank you.
Chair Olson and members of the committee, that concludes our brief overview. We remain available to answer any questions about our department or any of the other workforce development questions that you may have. And if there's no further questions.
I see at least one representative here. Yeah, I think well, maybe more than one. But
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I wanted to reserve a question for the commissioner. Yes, of course, Nancy Dahlstrom said that testified that you're working on a success definition under TVEP. And, of course, there are at least a couple of schools, I understand, voc-ed schools that want in to take advantage of TVEP dollars to help their programs. So I guess I'm just going to talk about the 800-pound gorilla. Is that, of course, the University of Alaska gets a very large part of that. Will they be under the same standards of success definition that all the little guys have to deal with, including your agency? So should the legislature be working in concert with you on defining that success definition? And second part of that is, instead of making the slice smaller for the little guys, shouldn't we slice some from the university?
Through the chair, Representative Herron, I'll start at the top with that. So there are 10 recipients of the TVEP funds, as you're well aware. And yes, 50% does go to the university, which is a large component. The university and both components, the university as a whole and then the southeast component, make up 50%. And Galena also are funds that go directly to those organizations. They don't come through the department. The rest of them are administered through us, and we provide you with a report that you should have gotten last week. There are no... The department has no authority to garner all the information that is required by statute at this point. I do believe that there needs to be a slight adjustment, and that is outlined in the governor's bill. It requires an articulation agreement, at least one. Every TVEP recipient needs to have at least one articulation agreement, encouraging them to work with our youth and encouraging them to work with our school districts to provide running start, for lack of a better term, to children or youth students at, graduating high school. And the second component in the governor's bill is the authority to reduce funding by 20% the following year if those measurements are not met and provided to the department. I feel that is sufficient to actually assist the department in gathering that information and providing it to you folks. As far as the cuts, the second part of your question, the department, as our executive director reported, is very neutral on the formula funding. We'll provide you the information that you need as far as performance measures, and then it's unfortunately, I have to say this, but up to you folks to make that determination at this point.
So. Mr. Chairman, thank you, Commissioner. Sure, we got the purse strings over here, but I'm wondering, should we work on the success definition again, because an underperformer, I'm not saying should be penalized, but we should think about what a success definition is. And again, Mr. Chairman, I think that we should be a part of that debate before we trot it out into the world.
Through the Chair, Representative Heron, I agree. There are three strong measurement components in there right now. The participant rate, the employment after completion, and the wage component are three strong performance measurements. The other two are difficult at best to get, and those other two components that are outlined in the statute right now require us to measure participant satisfaction and employer satisfaction. And that's hard information to get sometimes, frankly. So.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, thanks again for joining us today, and we are adjourned at 4:30.